Young people are the experts of their lives. Many adults feel like, we're the experts of young people's lives, but we haven't lived that child's experience. So taking the time to listen to students tell us what they need, listen to students tell us who they are. And many times young people may not know what they need or may not know who they are, but it's our job to guide them to realizing who they are, not tell them, but to guide them, to ask them questions, to allow them to respond to us and speak their voice.
Hello, and welcome to School Me, the National Education Association's podcast dedicated to helping educators thrive in the early stages of their career. I'm your host, Natika Samuels. You may have heard the terms restorative justice or restorative practices named as alternatives to past and current school disciplinary methods or as ways to dismantle the school-to-prison pipeline. But what are restorative practices and how can they change the school environment for the better? In the midst of the current civil rights movement, this is the perfect time to explore this topic. So we've brought Robin McNair, a 28-year educator and restorative approaches coordinator in Maryland, to break it all down for us. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you, Natika. I'm glad to be here with you today.
Let's just get started with a little bit about you. I've mentioned your long history as an educator and what you're doing now, but just to give everybody a little bit of a rundown of your experience, can you tell me about your career in education and how you got to where you are today?
I went to college for social work, and while I was in college, I had an educator or a professor who was amazing, and that was the moment that I decided I'm going to go into teaching. So I switched my major over to elementary education, and I graduated in 1991. I started teaching in North Carolina. I taught there for 2 years, and I had a desire to teach inner city children. So I packed up my things and moved to Washington, D.C. And I stayed in Washington, D.C. for about 2 years, and then I decided to move to Maryland, and I began my teaching career in Maryland in 1995, and I've been here ever since. I began teaching elementary school, and I moved from elementary school to middle school, where I fell in love with that particular age group. It was just a challenge every day for me. But then I was encouraged by my middle school principal to take my career further and move into the high school level. And I did. I went to high school and I realized that I had just graduated to heaven. I realized that high school was where I really thrived as an educator, because in high school, you're able to see young people from the time they walk in the door as that innocent ninth grader to the time they walk out and matriculate out of 12th grade as this young adult. So that's really encouraging to see. And then from high school, that's when I became introduced to restorative justice. And I started doing the work in my classroom and realized that I wanted to do this type of work at an ongoing basis. So the opportunity came for me to apply to become a full-time restorative justice coordinator in my district. And I applied, and I've been doing that ever since.
So, Robin, can you define restorative justice and restorative practices for us so that we can just start with that at the beginning of this conversation?
Restorative justice practices is a philosophy or mindset with a distinct set of processes that helps to build community and build relationships between students and staff, between students and students, and between staff and staff. It offers a safe space for deep conversations, deep authentic conversations, and it also allows for people to come together to address any type of harm that has happened in order to repair that harm and make sure the needs are met for those people who've been harmed and even the person who may have done the harm. It basically shifts from having a punitive approach to discipline to a more restorative approach to discipline in schools.
So when you're comparing restorative justice or restorative practices to what you call the punitive, or at least what I think of as the past ways of handling discipline, what are some of the maybe differences or examples of a different way that you might handle the same issue in the old way and then in the restorative way?
Basically, the old way, when someone shows some type of behavior that is deemed to be inappropriate, you immediately send them out. You immediately look at what the violation is, give them the consequence. And most often that consequence is something very punitive, such as suspensions, such as anything that will exclude that young person from any type of activities, or even sending that child out of class for several days. That's punitive. And that's how behaviors were handled for a very long time, starting in the 90s. But with a restorative approach, you first want to make sure that you are working with the young person so the relationship with you and the young person will be maintained. And you do that by having a dialogue with them, specifically asking them, okay, so what happened? And allowing that young person to tell you their side of what they feel happened. And then to allow them to kind of voice what they were thinking about when that certain behavior took place, and think about who was impacted by what they may have done, and then allow them to have accountability by letting them think of ways that they can repair that harm from what they've done. It's really about getting the young person's voice around how we can heal this harm that has taken place because of some type of conflict or inappropriate behavior.
You mentioned that your interest in this started while working within a high school. Was there anything particular that happened or an experience that you had that drew you to this work?
Yes. So right around maybe 2011, 2012, they started really analyzing and looking at the suspension and expulsion data in the United States. And because of what they found, the Obama administration basically created new guidelines around how to respond to certain behaviors in school without using suspension and expulsion. And right around that time, they were continuing to talk about the school-to-prison pipeline. So with that, they started taking away the strategies that educators and schools were used to, which were suspensions and expulsions. So instead of teachers being able to just kick students out and the students would be suspended for 3 days, the young people would come right back into the classroom. And teachers started showing some concerns because at this point, teachers were very used to just kicking students out. That had become the norm. So I was in the union at the time. I was the building rep for my school. And teachers would come to me and say, you know, I sent such and such out because they're misbehaving. And the principal didn't do anything. They sent them right back into my classroom. What are we going to do? And, you know, this became sort of an uproar among many educators. So being who I am, you know, I stand up and I start saying, look, what are we going to do? You know, these students are misbehaving. You know, we can't suspend them, because I was one of those teachers that would send a student out. My attitude was, if you're not in here to learn and do what I tell you to do, then you don't need to be here. You can get out. So here I am trying to advocate for the teachers, and the president of the union at that time said, okay, so we'll create a discipline committee, and Robin, you'll chair that discipline committee. So from that point, we had the discipline committee, and our charge was to go through the Students' Rights and Responsibility Handbook just to look at some of the interventions that were put in place and how they were beneficial to teachers or how they may have been adversarial to teachers. And as we were going through that handbook, we realized there was a phrase called restorative practices. And when I talked to the committee and asked them, had they ever heard of that? They were like, no, we haven't heard of that. So immediately I said, how in the world are you going to have this in a student rights responsibility handbook under what educators can do without training educators, without letting the educators know what it is? So I went to a discipline summit in Washington, D.C., and I went to a particular breakout session on restorative practices, and that was all she wrote. I have always been an educator who believed in educating the whole child. When I taught elementary school, you know, we would sit together and we would talk, and I had very good rapport with young people. At the same time, I was a punitive teacher. But sitting in that breakout session showed me something else our young people needed. Our young people needed an opportunity to have their voices heard. And from that point forward, I went to the union. I said, we've got to do something. We've got to get our educators trained in restorative practices. This is amazing. It'll be great for our teachers, be great for our students. It will allow their relationship to flourish in the classrooms. And I continued to just go from one training to the next training to the next training. We went from having a discussion about restorative practices to bringing in Harry Lawson from NEA to discuss with him how we can actually hold a professional development for educators. And we brought in Robert Spicer from Restorative Strategies out of Chicago. And those 4 days changed my life. oh my goodness, not only changed how I was an educator in the classroom, but it also changed how I interact with people in general. So the training had such positive feedback that, you know, we decided to take a shot at it and ask him for another round of trainings in the spring. So 2017, I think it was, they had interviews for restorative practices coordinator. I had the interviews for restorative practices coordinator, and I applied and was honored with that position.
Great. So what does a restorative approaches coordinator do? If people wanted to apply for this job in another place, what would they be expected to do? And what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
When you say restorative approaches coordinator, you can be talking about two different types. You can be talking about the district coordinator, which basically kind of guides and works with the implementation of restorative approaches or restorative practices throughout their whole school district. Or you can be talking about a school site coordinator. So I'm going to talk about the school site coordinator first. So a school site coordinator is basically a champion of restorative practices in schools. And I know I keep going from restorative practices to restorative approaches, a restorative justice practices, but it's really interchangeable. All of those terms are interchangeable because it's really about relationships. So no matter which term I use, understand that I'm talking about relationships first and building community in schools. The restorative practices coordinator in a school champions this work by helping to coach educators who have been trained, helping to support educators and support students in the educator's classroom. A typical day could be where the restorative coordinator is greeting young people as they're walking into the school buildings. Then, you know, the coordinator could be walking down the hall and checking in the classrooms, making sure teachers are okay. If a teacher is having a situation with a young person, that restorative coordinator could actually watch that teacher's class while the teacher could have a restorative conversation with the young person. It may be a situation where the teacher needs a break. So the restorative coordinator may go into the classroom and either sit with that child in the classroom and support that child, or bring the child out of the classroom and have a restorative conversation with the young person. And then later on, have a conversation with the young person and the teacher to make sure that relationship is going to be repaired. Another thing the restorative coordinator does is this restorative coordinator is the one that sits in circle with young people who may be having a conflict and helping them work it out. But it's not only about just working out conflicts and situations that may have caused harm. It's about building community and building relationships first and foremost. So a restorative coordinator at the beginning of a school year would make sure that staff circles are taking place, making sure that values are created for the school, making sure that there's a team that's working together to help create school policies and procedures that have a restorative lens. And of course, collecting data, because you know we got to collect data. On the district level, a restorative coordinator basically does the same thing, but does it on a larger scale. A district coordinator may be called into a school when a conflict has happened and they need to have a formal circle done, a restorative conference done. The restorative coordinator helps to provide trainings to schools who are implementing restorative practices in their schools. When you're doing this work is very deep work. It can be very emotional work. The school site coordinators also need a space in which they can come together with other coordinators and express and to collaborate and to get ideas from one another and what they can do at their schools if they may be having some challenges. And the district coordinator offers that space for the school site coordinators. The district coordinator is also responsible for setting up trainings for the schools and then going in and supporting teachers after they have gotten trained.
Thanks for listening to School Me, and a quick thank you to all of the NEA members listening. If you're not an NEA member yet, visit nea.org/whyjoin to learn more about member benefits. You mentioned the word circle a couple of times.
Yes.
I've heard that related to restorative practices and justice before. What is the significance of the circle in all of this?
The circle, which is a practice that comes from the indigenous cultures in our nation, is a space in which everyone sits in a circle. Therefore, you have no one who can hide. It puts everyone on the same level. There is no hierarchy in the circle. And what you do is you have something that we call a talking piece, kind of equivalent to maybe what the First Nations people would have called a talking stick. And whoever has the talking piece is the one that is able to speak their voice. And whoever does not have the talking piece has the permission to listen. And in this circle, you have different types of circle. You have your community building circles, which are your regular talking circles or support circles or celebration circles. And you may have a topic and you talk about it. And everyone gets the opportunity to speak. No one is left out. And if a person chooses not to speak, they can hold the talking piece and then they can pass it on. In a circle in which you are working to repair harm, you just have those people who have been impacted by that harm to come together, and you just ask questions about what happened, and you give each individual to speak from their perspective about what they saw that happened. Then you talk about who's been impacted and how they've been impacted and what their needs are. And then you talk about, okay, so what needs to happen in order to make things right, to repair and restore the relationships that have been broken. One important thing about the circle is that it is voluntary. Restorative practices is not to be forced upon anyone. It is a voluntary practice in which people feel safe enough to come into the space to express their true feelings. Peacemaking circles have been used for many, many years to problem solve, make decisions, and to repair harm that has been done to a community. And the reason we want to involve everyone impacted is because we're talking about building community. So other people may have been impacted by a particular incident, and we don't want to leave their voices out of the conversation because they have needs too. So we want to make sure everybody's voice and needs are heard in this space.
I've always heard that, so I wanted to make sure I understood what was meant by that. So should we just think of restorative practices of the new way to discipline students, or is it something entirely different?
To be honest, I don't think it is a new way. I think that being restorative is really who you are. And there have been schools, there have been educators who have been restorative with their young people. I think that because of the zero tolerance policies, our school systems and institutions took on the punitive approach and made it the norm. So a person being restorative with their young people was considered soft, or you're not giving that student what they deserve, or they need to be suspended because they need to be taught a lesson. And I think that because of the implications of what has happened around the excessive suspensions and expulsions, advocates have stepped in and said, no, we have to do something different. And that is when the term restorative practices was coined. So restorative justice, which of course comes from the criminal justice background, had been in place since like the 70s. And because that had such a positive outcome in the penal system, a lot of advocates for education decided to kind of bring that on into the schools to address the excessive suspensions and expulsions. And with that came restorative justice in education. And I think Minnesota was one of the first places that actually used restorative justice in schools instead of just a straight out suspension or straight out expulsion. Because suspension does not change behavior. Suspension does not stop what may have been happening to warrant the suspension. All it does is it makes the young person upset. It gives the teacher a break for a couple of days, and it holds nobody accountable. So when that young person comes back, guess what? That student is still upset with that teacher. That teacher is now feeling some type of way about this young person and will now stigmatize that person in the classroom. And the young person is not held accountable. So you're going to have that cycle again, to the point where that young person feels like, well, they don't value me anyway. Nobody takes the time to talk to me about why I may be behaving this way. And a young child may not even know why they're behaving that way. It leads to a potential that a child has being overlooked because they're being put out and because they're being pushed out. So with restorative practices, you're basically bringing back what should have been in the first place, which is a relationship, positive interaction, conversations with the young people that we teach and with the educators that we work with.
You mentioned the roots of these practices in criminal justice and our penal system. So that brings me to think about the school to prison pipeline, which we've mentioned a little bit here. How do restorative practices and how does restorative justice help dismantle the school to prison pipeline?
Research has shown that there is a direct correlation with school suspensions and expulsions, student arrests with young people being incarcerated or young people being caught up in the criminal justice system. And when you suspend a young person, that young person is more likely to get caught up in some type of activity that may be criminal, whether or not they're in the streets, maybe loitering with a group of people that may be involved in criminal activity, whether it is going into a store and maybe shoplifting, all because they've been put out of school for 3 days because they didn't bring a pencil to class. And as young people continue to be suspended, their attitudes towards school may become very negative, where they don't feel valued, where they don't see the relevance in their education. So they could drop out. They may not be able to get a job that has a living wage to support themselves. So they may resort to some type of activity to get money that is not ideal. And that particular action may, once again, cause them to become involved in the criminal justice system. So when you take away policies that calls for suspension and expulsions of young people, and you bring in restorative practices where you sit down with the child and you have a conversation about the particular incident that took place, and you allow that young person to reflect on what they were thinking or feeling at the time, allowing that young person to develop empathy because now they're being asked to think about who their actions impacted and how they may have been impacted, and giving that young person the opportunity to say, okay, so what can you do to make things right? What can you do to be held accountable for the actions? And then supporting that young person in meeting the expectations of how they're going to be held accountable. And it prevents the young person from being suspended. Now, the number one goal for many school leaders is to make sure their school stays safe. So you want to make sure that whatever decisions are made is going to be a decision that's going to ensure the safety of everybody in that school building and ensure the safety of that young person as well. That is one way that you can help dismantle the school to prison pipeline, is just keeping young people in school and offering them the space to be able to reflect on what they did, but giving them the tools that they need to be able to make a different decision the next time. And all of this correlates with socio-emotional learning and socio-emotional skills that students are constantly developing.
Yeah, it sounds like giving students a sense of agency is extremely helpful. And I wanted to ask, what role do the students play then? So you're giving them all this agency. What are they expected to do with that? Or what do we hope they do with that?
We hope that they're able to carry over what they've learned within the circle, into their daily interaction with their peers and into their daily interaction with their extracurricular activities or their interaction at home with their parents and with their siblings. One of the things that restorative justice does in schools also is that it helps to bring out youth leadership, helps to bring out youth empowerment, because young people are the experts of their lives. Many adults feel like, you know, we're the experts of young people's lives, but we haven't lived that child's experience. So taking the time to listen to students tell us what they need, listen to students tell us who they are. And many times young people may not know what they need or may not know who they are. But it's our job to guide them to realizing who they are, not tell them, but to guide them, to ask them questions, to allow them to respond to us and speak their voice. And that's what restorative practices does. It also creates spaces for young people to become restorative peer mediators, to become circle keepers in their schools. Oftentimes, when you think about those people who are the greatest leaders in our country or in our world, if you go back into their school history, they most likely had some teachers that said, oh my goodness, oh, they were a handful. Oh wow, they were challenging. But instead of looking at a child as being challenging, look at a child as having the potential of leadership. Look at a child who's very vocal and always speaking up and speaking their mind as being being the advocate, you know, being a leader, being a congressman, being a congresswoman. So it's important to have students' voices at the table, and not just at the table as a token to say, I have a student on this committee, but really listening to what the student has to say and valuing that student's input, and then giving them opportunities to lead, because students can lead adults. We just have to give them that opportunity.
Robin had so much to share, we needed two parts. So make sure you're subscribed and look out for the continuation of our conversation in your feed. While you're at it, let us know how you're enjoying the show by rating and reviewing the podcast. I'll see you in the next episode.